You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Feral Audio.
My name is Lucille Lamone, and 1 year ago I hired a web designer to build a website to display my hand-knitted American history-themed neckties and business gloves. The web designer stopped returning my phone calls, and when I threatened to take him to small claims court to get my $6,000 deposit, he put an alligator in my window while I was sleeping. The alligator chewed both of my arms off and one of my feet. Now I'm forced to knit with my mouth and remaining foot, and my work has suffered greatly. Now I cannot enjoy an alligator show or the smell of Doritos without thinking of the morbidly obese con man alligator wrangler who not only destroyed my business but ruined my life. If only I had used Squarespace. Squarespace.
Hello, my name is Duncan Trussell, host of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast and inventor of the Hiker's Comb. Unfortunately, the story you just heard is not an isolated incident. One of the number one causes of dismemberment in the United States is from getting mauled by a deadly animal placed in your window by an unscrupulous web designer. From bears to honey badgers, the neighborhoods of America are filled with the screams of innocent victims who awaken to find their bodies being ripped apart by the sharp, vicious teeth of deadly animals. This could happen to you. But it definitely won't if you use Squarespace to build your website. There is no need to get ripped apart by a wild animal just because you want an amazing world-class website to start your business or blog. You can go to squarespace.com. And for plans starting at $8 a month, you can build a world-class website. You can even start a trial membership with no credit card to see if the website works for you. Works for me. I have built a website called podriff.com dedicated to the project that we're doing to try to allow people to podcast in virtual reality space. And this technology, of course, is eventually going to lead to the invention of a time machine, which will suck us all through a hole in the time-space continuum where we'll all exist as one blob of plasmatic consciousness in some futuristic paradise. That's all thanks to Squarespace. Check them out. If you go to Squarespace and enter in offer code Duncan, you'll get 10% off your first purchase. You should really try them. I'm not saying web designers are bad, and I know not all web designers have some wild animals in their backyard that they're going to release into your house if you dare to ask them to finish the job, but most of them will. There's some good ones out there. I use one. His name's Steve. He's fantastic, but if you want to stick your sweet little toe into the rivers of capitalism and find out if your business idea might actually work, why spend thousands of dollars in the beginning? At least start with Squarespace. See if your website's going to work. They've got an online store that you can use. They've got a way to process credit cards. And they've even got an awesome logo designer, which is pretty cool. It's a good business. Give them a try. Why not? They're supporting this podcast, and they're really sweeties over there. And most importantly, they're keeping so many entrepreneurs from waking up to stare down at the coils of their intestines falling off the side of their bed and blood pouring out of their torsos in a thick, red crimson river. That's squarespace.com. They're building time machines and keeping you from getting ripped apart by deadly creatures. Go to squarespace.com, enter offer code Duncan, and you get 10% off your first purchase. God bless you, Squarespace. Thank you for supporting this podcast, and thank you for keeping the people of America from being painfully dismembered in their sleep. Squarespace. Squarespace.
Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast is also brought to you by Amazon.com. The next time you're going to buy something through Amazon, won't you please just go to DuncanTrussell.com and click on the colorful Amazon portal that's located on the comments section of this very podcast. when you go through that portal, not only will you feel your quarks and nano quarks being massaged by the hands of primordial demons, you'll also give a small percentage of your purchase to your favorite podcast, the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. And it won't cost you anything extra. There's no need to go outside anymore. I don't have to tell you that the world is a cyclone of the bared teeth of lunatics, all polishing their bullets and just waiting to blast you into oblivion. You don't need to go outside. If you're going to go outside, make it because you're on a bicycle or going camping or figuring out how to build solar panels or bowing down at the feet of some forest guru who's teaching you how to astrally project and walk through walls. There's no need to spend your precious time here on this beautiful green living planet wandering through the hell mazes that are the chain stores of America. Do you really want to Do you want to breathe the combination of the stinky carcinogenic plastic and the hamburger farts being blown out of the poor desperate souls trying to find diapers and applesauce? You don't want to deal with that. Go to Amazon.com. They have everything you could possibly need. But first, go through our portal, won't you? Going through portals is always good. Everyone wants to go into a portal, and we've got a great one. Go through the portal, support this podcast. Also, I've got some dates coming up. If you go to DuncanTrussell.com, you can see that I'm going in next week, which is the 9th and the 10th. I will be in Utah with the great Joey Diaz. If you're out in that area, please come. And of course, we have a shop, and you can check out some of our shirts. We've got an amazing new t-shirt coming in from Ron Ricci, and we're going to replace the logo t-shirts that took forever to replace because of various catastrophes related to global warming. But soon the shop will be stocked up again. Go check it now. Maybe you'll find a shirt that you like. Okay, let's get this podcast going. Let me just say before this starts that a few nights ago, I did a live podcast at the Hollywood Improv, and then we had an after party, and it was definitely, I think it was one of the top three best nights of my life. The other two best nights of my life were involved being abducted by an alien and flown to a paradise planet on a small little meteor off the in Alpha Centauri. But this was definitely the third greatest night. It was amazing not only to find out that a live podcast can really work, but it was the coolest part of it was meeting all of you guys who came to the show. You guys are the coolest people ever. It was so fun getting to meet you in person and then getting to hang out with you at the R Bar, where we had a wonderful after party and with DJs Emil Amos and Nina Tarr and Demon Babies. So I just want to say thank you to all of you guys who came to see the show, and thank you to everyone who gave me so many cool gifts, including a laser-etched water bottle that has gratitude written on it. So the idea is that apparently there was that experiment done. I can't remember the guy's name, but apparently if you put like a smiley face in front of water, it makes it happy. Do I necessarily believe that? Absolutely not, but it's still a beautiful water bottle. So thank you for that. Thank you so much for the awesome comic book, and thank you for the party rats. Somebody gave me the most amazing gift that has really transformed my life. These are tiny little light rats that you can strap on your finger. They're great for partying, but they're also fantastic for night blogging, which is something that I really love to do. So it was amazing to see all you guys, and we're going to start doing that once a month, I think. So keep your ears peeled, opened. Keep your ears opened and peeled, because we're going to be doing more of these, and I sure as hell hope you guys will keep coming out. So here we go. Here's a live podcast. I'm sorry if it seems a little different than a normal interview, but it's a different dynamic when you're in front of an entire group of people. And I was nervous in the beginning, but then when I realized that the room was just filled with a kind of awesome love vibe, I think I loosened up. And Harmon and Emil, who are the guests, are geniuses. So there was really nothing that you could do wrong, because those guys were always there to pick up the ball if I dropped it, which hopefully I didn't do too many times. So here we go. The guests on today's podcast are Emil Amos. You can follow him on Twitter. That's Emil_Amos. There'll be a link to that on the comments section of this website. And he's also got an album out on Bandcamp called Lost Decade 2. You can listen to a song that we recorded together called Altar in the Woods. All those links are going to be on my website. Today's other guest is Dan Harmon. He is the creator of Community. He is also the creator of the Adult Swim show Rick and Morty. And he's also the host of an amazing podcast called Harmontown. So you should definitely listen to that. It's also on Feral Audio, the podcast network that this podcast is on. Okay, everybody, now please open your third eyes, send out your love tendrils, not just to these two awesome human beings, but also to the entire group of 200 meat bodies that gathered together to see the first Los Angeles live Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. Hare Krishna!
Please welcome Duncan Trussell of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour.
Hello! Wow. Hi! Hello! Hello! Thank you. Thank you so much. This is amazing. Wow, this is really crazy. I'm so excited that, I was just talking to Dan Harmon, and he's saying, isn't it great to find out that all those years of working on material were for nothing? Because that is so cool. It's such a great thing. It's so exciting what's happening with podcasts. It's amazing to think that they've drawn an entire crowd of people to the improv. So cool. And the way I see it, if you get a group of 200 people together in a room, then the first thing you always have to do after saying hello is to get them to intone the sacred Om. So I was thinking we could all just do that for a little while. Just make the oming sound and relax and sort of shift the energy in this club a little bit, because it is a comedy club. And probably right now at this very moment, there's some angry old comic just radiating poison energy into this room as he snarls that doing a podcast does not count as comedy. So let's do it. One, two, three. Oh.
Sounds so cool.
I'd rather do that for the whole show. We broke a glass! Yes! If we direct our energy, we can kill Putin tonight. Not that you'd want to. That guy's pretty awesome, actually. So I guess I have to start the podcast by, because it's weird. Right now, we're bifurcated, because not only there's a lot, you guys are here, but then there's also like a big audience out there on the internet. So as I've been thinking about how to do this, I've sort of been rolling around in my mind, like, how do I bring you two together? And I was thinking what would be so awesome after I introduce the podcast is that we could all sing the theme song. Okay. Okay, cool. What's that?
Jonestown.
She said Duncan, Jonestown. Not tonight. Maybe in a few months after we really get to know each other, we'll drink poison. But I really just want... Oh, you're saying a lot of people don't... You guys might not know that the... You're welcome. Right. I forgot why you said that for a second. I thought you were accusing me of doing some kind of Jim Jones thing. But yeah, what she's saying is the theme song is the Jonestown Family Choir singing that, for those of you guys who didn't know. But I figure those little kids shouldn't, they shouldn't die, drink cyanide for nothing. Like, now, now there's songs on a podcast. That's kind of cool. Okay, so I'm just going to introduce the podcast for the internet. I don't know what this is. This is going to sound really weird. This is the second live show I've ever done, so forgive me if it's a little bumpy or weird. I'm just going to have to figure out how to do the podcast live, because usually the way I do the podcast is I'm sitting in my house having had, like, mini glasses of coffee. Glasses of coffee? I drink my coffee out of a wine glass. That's part of the process. And then I maybe eat a little marijuana and then sit in front of the computer and sort of record the intro over and over and over and over again for hours. Like, my neighbors must think it's just like a schizophrenic lonely guy sitting there talking to himself in his underwear, drinking coffee out of a wine glass. So forgive me if whatever I end up saying in the beginning is real crumbly and strange, because normally I'd be going back and editing it. So anyway, here we go. So weird. Hello, everybody. It's me, Duncan Trussell, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. And we are recording in front of a live audience at the Hollywood Improv. Say hello. There are 200 meat bodies jammed into this room right now, and it's an incredible feeling. A lot of great energy is in here right now, all of you listening out there on the internet. And before I started recording this part of it, I told everybody that we are going to say hello to you by singing the theme song. So do you guys know it? Do you guys know it? Okay, so maybe we'll do it. We'll sing two verses of it, and then we'll get going with a podcast. On the count of three, let's get going. One, two, three.
Welcome all of you that you are with us. Say hands, go to the crew. Welcome to you.
Great work! Great! But we're going to do it one more time, but this time, do it like you knew that your parents were going to make you drink cyanide in a few months. So really make it a good performance. Okay, on the count of three. One, two, three.
Welcome all of you.
To be blue. Welcome to you. Woo! Awesome. That was perfect. Well, I'm not going to talk about, I don't know how caught up you guys are on the podcast, but over the last few weeks, I've gotten a severe bicycle addiction, and I can't stop. It's the strangest thing. I'm really hooked on riding a bicycle, and today I had my first case of bicycle rage, where, because you know the Lycra guys, like, if you see them go by when you're walking, they just seem to be seething anger. They're Lycra, like, once you're wearing Lycra and you're on a bike, you become a kind of like a cruise missile that has to deal with, like, people driving cars. You have to deal with people driving cars. And the more you ride a bike, the more people driving cars seem like the end result of a collapsing shit system. Like, people, they see, the more you're riding on your bike, because when you're riding on your bike, you are given this incredible gift, which is that the the space between point A and point B becomes more important than any of the points. You're doing it for just to be in the space of riding your bike outside. And the more you ride your bike, the more you realize how car culture has basically robbed everyone of so many things, like the smell of cooking food. Like when you're driving your car by people's houses, you don't smell that. When you're riding your bike, you can smell people cooking. You can listen to what's going on inside their house. Sometimes you hear them fucking. And then you put your bike down and you creep up to their windows. Cars have robbed us of that. They've robbed us of the ability to be voyeurs. They've robbed us of the joy of fervently masturbating next to someone's house, wearing your bicycle helmet and crying. But the other thing that cars rob you of is hills. They rob you of hills. And hills are something, a few weeks ago, like 3 weeks ago, I don't know if you guys can see it, but there is a little bit of color in my hands. And for the last many, many years, my hands have been Gollum white, just the white of someone who just stays inside and like, just is like completely stuck inside their house. But now this addiction is like, I'm actually getting a tan. And when I first started riding my bike, I began to dread the hills. That was something I got really worried about. And I would think like, oh, there's no way that I'm going to be able to get to these certain parts of town because there's a steep, terrible hill in between me and that place. And there's no way I'm going to get my bike up it. And my ego's too big to like get off my bike and push it up the hill like it's 4-year-old pushing a trike. So, but then now that I've gotten addicted, I've started going up these hills. And the weird thing that's happening is now I find myself longing for the hills more than going down the hill. I don't know if there's cyclists in the audience, if that's something that you experience or if it's means I might have a brain tumor or something. Fixed gear.
No brakes.
No brakes. That's a terrible idea. I don't understand that. We can talk about that, but why do people not want brakes on their bike?
It's a fixed gear, so yeah. It's like,
why?
Because it's just more daring.
That's what it is. What he's saying is really what starts happening is because you realize the rush of riding the bike is not just being outside and being in nature, but it's also there's an incredible rush when cars are getting really close to you. There's something really exciting about the danger. So what you're talking about is like you love the idea of having to squeeze your legs together and push back on the tire just for the sheer horror of knowing that if you fuck up, you're gonna slide in front of one of those concrete trucks and that's it. No! I want brakes, man. I squeeze my brakes when I'm going downhill. I'm constantly terrified of the... Maybe that's why I don't like hills, because I'm a pussy and I don't want to go too fast. But I like the... What you begin to realize is that cars are robbing us of hills. They're robbing you of the thing that a hill teaches you, which is that if you keep trying to go up any hill, eventually your body is going to warp and conform so that you can then get up a hill. And it's clearly an obvious metaphor, which Donovan embodied in that incredible song, which I can't remember the name of. It's a Zen koan, which goes, first there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is. And that is, you guys have heard that? You guys have obviously listened to the podcast a bunch, you know that I tend to rave about how awesome technology is and the incredible idea that at this very moment where probably every selfie you take or every video you make will be assimilated by some futuristic supercomputer and allow people to wear virtual reality goggles and go backwards in time to have conversations with digitized versions of themselves who've been imbued with artificial intelligence based on their social fingerprint. You guys know what I'm... No? Yeah, okay, cool. One of the cool things about doing this by yourself is like everything's an awkward silence. So you don't know... So there's something exciting about the idea, to me, of the technology presented pre-bike. Pre-bike, the idea of being able to go open up digital wormholes and travel into virtual realities seemed like an incredible thing. But now that I've just been outside every day, all I want to do is like go up a hill and listen to birds and get to places where morbidly obese people can't come because... Those places are always more beautiful. They always are. The hill creates a barrier. The hill is the ultimate blockade for the parasitic shitheads of society who think about a hill in the same way vampires think about garlic. Like, no, it hurts you. So I had my first, I had my first case of bike rage today as I was going downhill and going super fast and some guy pushing one of those little ice cream truck things, like tried to get in front of my bike and I pulled the brakes on and I almost wrecked into him. And then I'm like, fuck you, dumb shit, fuck. And I realized, like, the whole hill thing is bullshit for you. You can't assimilate the idea that life is a journey if you're screaming to some poor guy who wants to sell ice cream, you asshole. But that's the thing that a bike ends up teaching you is that the tendency in the society that we're in is that they want to take the hills away from us and they act like that's giving you a gift. They want to take away that moment in between where you are and where you want to be, that incredible uphill struggle. They want to remove that from you or give you the illusion that hills could be taken away from anything. You can't, there's no way to get rid of hills. It's like getting wetness out of water. Hills are a natural part of existence, and the struggle in between where you are and where you want to be is way better than any reward you get from finally arriving at the destination. And that, thank you. But that used to be the paycheck, you know? There, like now there's a paycheck where if you do a certain number of things for a certain amount of weeks, you get a paycheck at the end of it. But it used to be there was no paycheck. Like everything was just the belly of a mother dog and humans were sort of wandering through that primordial, dangerous beauty, just suckling on nipple after nipple after nipple, which was fishing or having sex or even getting attacked by a tiger. And the great conspiracy is that Barack Obama is an American. He is not an American. That's the only thing I wanted to say to you guys. He's a Kenyan, and those hills have taught me that. When I'm riding up the hills, a bird lands. There's always the same bird. He's got seven eyes and he has an American flag and he says, tell them Obama is a fraud. I mentioned the whole thing about that weird getting to love the effort between point A and point B because my two guests today are the most hardworking, prolific people that I know in my life. They're not only are they two geniuses, but they have a work ethic unlike anything that I've ever seen. And it kind of acts like a little bit of sand in my bathing suit when I consider how absolutely hard they work to produce the stuff that they produce. So I'm hoping that we can talk a little bit in this podcast with them about the creative process and the question of of when is leisure more important than production? And some of the ideas that I often have is I'm laying in my bed playing Hearthstone when I should be putting a podcast out. So we're just gonna get the show going. Emil's gonna come up. For those of you who haven't listened to the podcast, Emil Amos is a musician who plays drums for the band Ohm. He also has his own band called the Holy Sons, and he's gonna come on stage and play some music for us. So give him a round of applause, everybody. Emil Amos. You just got to worm your way through, friend. Emo, everybody, let him hear it.
Take or leave them if I please. Oh, the game of life is hard to play. I'm gonna lose it anyway. The losing card I'll someday lay. So this is all I have to say. Suicide is painless. It brings on many changes. I can take or leave them if I please. Doesn't hurt till it begins, and as it works its way on in, the pain grows stronger watch it grin. The pain grows stronger, watch it grin. Now suicide is painless. It brings on many changes, and I can take or leave that if I please. This thankless life, don't bring me back. This thankless life, the things I don't wanna see, and I know it's gonna win. Gonna win again. You know I played the game, I played it through. I don't care how it ends. I know who wins. Don't bring me back to see my enemies defeating me. I know how it feels. I know how it feels. Know how I feel. Know how I feel. Just don't want to see my enemies defeating me. I know how it feels. I know how it feels. Know how it feels.
More so we can kind of keep moving. Do that too. Okay.
I've been chipping away at a stone, living in the dark of a mine. Then you just walked right in, turned on the light, and I smile again. Felt like I'd never been received, and so I'd never be received. And if I'd never gotten love, I wouldn't recognize it. Reconcile my aloneness, embrace redemption when it's not hard won. You see things laid out for you, being a king was easy for you. Felt like I'd never been received, so I'd never be received. And if I'd never gotten love, I wouldn't recognize it. And if I'd never be received, then I'd never be received.
You may have heard this song because it was recorded when me and Duncan were tripping. That's not true. That was a Richie Havens reference from Woodstock that never came out, but you have to know. Storms clear, I'll be standing right here. I'll survive the sadness of this world. So let the sun rise. I am a young man. I live a long time. I hope my heart not set on mine. I gotta move slow and let my eyes close.
trust in this world with my life. Oh, yeah.
Emil Amos, everybody, let him hear it! Emil Amos! All right, cool. Well, Dan Harmon is now he's going to read a passage from his book, You'll Be Perfect When You're Dead. Everybody, give it up for Dan Harmon, let him hear it! It's hard to get up here. Dan Harmon, everybody! Dan Harmon!
Thank you. Thanks for having me, and thank you, Emil Amos, for making my fiance pregnant with your voice. It's just less work for me. My fiance published this book for me as a birthday gift. I don't think anyone was looking to publish any of my work. But she, for my 40th birthday, she published this book. And it was a very thoughtful and, it turns out, profitable birthday gift. So, I just want to disclaim and say, like, a lot of this stuff is cold. This is from April 12, 2008. This is like from my MySpace blog entry. At the time, I had an ex-girlfriend who very justifiably was feeling passive-aggressively harangued by some of my veiled references to our relationship. She just in general didn't like the idea that I was a sort of transparent life blogger that was including her in my maelstrom. This is me aiming a javelin at her eye. but in the most cowardly way possible. Because I'm a great person, and I was an even better person in 2008. So if there's any references to, like, the Hulk being nominated for an Emmy, you understand this is a... some people will be... well, that guy played the MASH theme. When was this recorded? Okay, I talk about you in this blog entry, April 12, 2008. Later on in this blog entry, I talk about you. But first, some chit-chat. In my previous entry, I said, if you live in Los Angeles, the weather was beautiful today. What am I, an immigrant practicing conversation? What's the unspoken remainder of that insight? If you don't live in Los Angeles, I have a hat. If you live in Quebec, there is a library. I apologize for that. It was out of line. The weather was beautiful yesterday, regardless of where you live. I try to keep the contents of my MySpace blog concise, polite, accessible, soup, and faggot. It's 2008. It was a different time. It's not often I step out of bounds, but when I do, I account for it. I apologize. I am sorry that I said, if you live in Los Angeles, the weather was beautiful today. You don't need that kind of bullshit. This blog isn't written for you by your fat daughter. I don't get that kind of latitude. I slip up, pow, you pull the plug. You stop reading. Alternate suggestions for the sound of someone pulling the plug. Plook, cloop, plug, bloop, unplook. New paragraph. Still not talking about you yet. Maybe I'll talk about you later. Maybe the last sentence will be, you're a bad person. Dropped like a fizzucking bizom after 11 pages of improvised onomatopoeia and stream of consciousness. What the French call le consciousness au stream. All right, enough. Let's talk about you. Psych! You know what? Maybe I will never talk about you again. Maybe I will not talk about you for 6 months, but then talk about you for 20 pages. Would you like a schedule of when I'll be talking about you? Well, wouldn't that be convenient? Given the amount of text I write that you have to scan and the time you'd save not having to scan it, you could take up tennis. Get some shopping done. Work on that thing you do that only you do that I may or may not be referring to right now. Well, it just doesn't work that way. You fuck. Welcome to Hostagence. Don't look it up, I'll tell you. It's the state of being held hostage. Wait, hold it, stop. Do not use that word today. I made it up. I almost made you look stupid in front of your friends today. Speaking of friends, am I going to talk about you? And no! New paragraph. Nothing to do with you. Hey-o! I'm not talking about you yet, but I am talking to you. Just you. You know who you are. You know I'm only pretending this is generic. You know I'm looking directly at you and you alone. And there is something I need to say to you that I would only want to say if I was talking to you. I shouldn't have this kind of control over your life. You should be floating through space and have Newtonian interactions based on your gravity, your mass, your momentum. I shouldn't be affecting you. I think you should stop reading. I promise that if you stop reading right now, I will stop writing. Ugh. Okay, we both broke that deal. Another paragraph. What's this one going to be about? Is it going to be more bullshit about how sad, lonely, or scared I am? You don't have time for this shit. If I'm going to say nothing of any importance to you, the least I could do is keep it short. If I'm going to talk about you, can't I just get to it? You don't have all day. You have a conversation scheduled immediately after this to talk about me talking about you. I feel bad about this enormous mountain of self-expression. I can't imagine how angry you must be when you pull up to it in your empty pickup truck and see how many meaningless chunks of me you'll have to toss over your shoulder before you find anything that reflects enough of your special face. Well, here, let me give you a break. Here's a shiny gem about you. I think you're stupid, selfish, and untalented. Here, let me help you load that into your truck, you vacuous piece of shit. We'll strap it with some bungee. Actually, why don't I ride with you so I can help you get this onto your identity pile? It can be pretty heavy to realize that I perceive you as a wimpy, empty, self-important bore. Is this your pile here? Oh, wow, impressive. Man, you sure have a lot of stuff from other people on here. No, no, that's not a judgment. Although I suppose if it was, it would go right on this pile. Okay, let's get this big mother off your truck. Man, I really let you have it with this one, you parasite. This is bigger than anything you've already got. Now, I'm required to say this to everyone, just as a formality. You do realize, of course, that this giant jewel you got from Mount Harmon, while inspired by you and reflective of you, is not you, and that its value as a piece of expression is not value that can be directly attributed to you, but is, in fact, the direct result of Dan Harmon's tendency to make things interesting. Okay, good. I know it's obvious, but I'm required to tell people that. You know, as long as I'm here, mind if I take a look at who you really are? I wouldn't mind getting underneath a lot of this stuff. Can we do a little experiment here? Can we put everything back the way we found it as soon as I'm done? But I just want to try something. Could we please remove everything from your identity that is the result of someone else saying something about you? Let's just, whoa, easy. I'm not doing anything permanent. We're going to put it all back. You're going to be who you were before I came here. I just want to show you something. Let's just make a separate pile for all these rumors people have spread about you and compliments and insults people have dealt you and these horoscopes and, oh, personality quizzes don't count as self-expression. People are always surprised to find that out. Applause, boos, your mother said a bunch of bullshit that cuts both ways, but none of it matters. Your accountant says you're attentive. Your roommate says you're a slob. Someone said you were a genius. Here's some photographs. Those are of you, but they aren't you. Here's a clipping from a publication, not you. And, of course, this giant sparkling jewel I created when I called you human garbage, not you. Next, let's set aside all the things you like. Yes, the things we like are there because of who we are, but we're trying to get to the who we are part. We are not BBC America, sunsets, baby elephants, and Converse. Okay, if we did this right, what we should have left is the stuff you've generated, including anything you've expressed about yourself that hasn't been propaganda, sabotage, or lies, and we call that your actual identity. Well, now, don't be ashamed. Just because it's not a giant pile of stuff doesn't mean you're not a person. It's exactly fears like that that lead people overpiling with other people's stuff. You have plenty here. Once your pile is cleaner, it makes it easier to make it bigger. What do we got here? You're a chocoholic? I'm sorry, that shouldn't be in here. That's just saying you like chocolate. You can't put a holic after something you consume and call that an identity. Aw, what's this little doodad? Did you make this? See, there we go. You make stuff. Everybody makes something. Let me check it out. I won't break it. I'm very familiar with these. This is called an attention sucker. It's designed to draw attention toward an identity pile. These are cool. Can I show you something? I have to actually open this. It's okay. Take it easy. I make these things all the time. I know them inside and out. A lot of people hate these things because they draw attention to identity piles that have nothing in them but more attention suckers. But inside every single one of these lame-ass, embarrassing, derivative pieces of shit that we make is something incredible. Look here. See that? It's right at the center. That's a little baby expression. See how pretty? This expression contains something called need. And even though no two expressions of need are the same, the need they express is universal and eternal, so much so that you can't normally see it unless it's expressed inside one of these little gems. Isn't that pretty? Look at that need. Look how insanely incomplete and alone you are. It's infinite. You were born in need. You will die in it. Some people think that not only does need connect all people and all life, but that life is itself an expression of need on the part of a physical universe, and that the physical universe is an expression of need on the part of the nothingness it's trying to fill. And some people actually believe that that's what God is, the original, infinite, unknowable, unfillable need, a single thought that says something that is not must now be. And these people that believe these things, they say that you can atone with that God by expressing your own need, by simply figuring out what it is you want, being honest with yourself about it, and then expressing it in some way, in a conversation, a poem, a joke, a movie, a stained glass window, etc. And everything you touch grows, and everything you imagine becomes, and you get laid, and you make money, and your life is easy. And you never have to defend yourself, because everyone that means you harm bursts into flame because you're doing God's work and he doesn't want you fucked with. Now, let's put this unintentional expression of need you made back inside this dumb thing surrounding it that wasted the world's time. And let's put that back in your pile. And let's put all your bullshit back there. All your rehearsal, ambition, misdirection, self-pity, melodrama, entitlement, restraint, privacy, and brazen, bold-faced lies. There. You're all back to your shitty self again. With me saying you're shitty right on top, like a star on a Christmas tree. You are quite welcome. Thank you. Sorry.
That was awesome.
Thank you. Dan Harmon, everybody! Let him in! Dan Harmon! Wow. All right. Let's get this show going. Everybody, please. Open up your heart chakras and shoot love tentacles out into the ether and welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, my two best friends, the coolest people I know in the world. Everybody give it up for Dan Harmon and Emil Amos. Let them hear it.
I could have just stayed up here.
Yeah, I realize that. It's still clunky. I got to figure out the... I should get a stage manager or something, huh?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Can we order beers and shit?
Yeah. What kind of beer do you want?
The Stella. Couple. Two of them. Three.
You guys, that was amazing. Thank you so much. That was really awesome, man. Thank you. So, both of you, the reason I thought it was kind of it wasn't even intentional, but then I realized you both in your own way are kind of tortured by this stuff that's coming out of you. And what is that? Do you think that's a necessary component of the process, or is that something that people just think they're supposed to feel? You know, like, why is it that the thing seems to be in some way impacting you that in a way that isn't ultimately pleasurable?
Well, I have always thought that like creatives are these gingerbread men that they're made out of just this empty what you call a meat body.
Yeah.
And then there's a hole, if you're a creative, there's a hole going through the center of you that's meant to just have some shit that is not you at all come through it and get lightly flavored by the inside rim of your gingerbread hole.
Right. That's from the Bible.
But there is a, yes, but there's a third component to it. I think the reason it hurts is because there's this thing called the ego, which is this uninvited, unnecessary Cronenberg muscle mass that kind of contorts the gingerbread man and also is like blocks the hole. Like Daffy Duck like is the quintessential depiction of the ego. Like he wants the pearl. Mine. Like Daffy Duck wants more credit than Bugs Bunny. He wants...
Daffy Duck wants pearls? That was something he was going...
Yeah, remember the Genie Cave episode?
No.
Yeah, Pismo Beach, yeah. It's your ego is like the thing that goes, oh, I wrote that. I did that.
Right.
And then that's the thing that has to get obliterated in order for you to write anything. Because it won't, that's the thing that keeps the cursor blinking and nothing being typey-typed.
Right. That's awesome. So But the weird problem that you're talking about is that if you completely remove the ego, then you don't really get to enjoy the fact that you made something.
Bingo, yeah.
So that's the big paradox.
So the part of you that's capable of feeling anything and taking credit for anything and enjoying anything, that's the part of you that has to be gone, dead, gone whenever you do anything of merit.
That's from there's like this essay Aleister Crowley wrote. For those of you guys who don't know that, he's this occult awesome. He's like in a you know, he's one of the great magicians of our time. But he had an essay called The Holy Grail, and he said the terrible thing about the Grail cup is that the moment you drink from it, you stop being you anymore, so you can't enjoy whatever that incredible delight would be in having eternal youth or being perpetually everything. So are you saying that the suffering that comes from making this stuff is just you clinging to the greedy enjoyment of what's coming out of you?
Yeah.
Cool. What do you think?
I think that's totally correct. But it was interesting you were talking about enjoying hills earlier, right?
Yeah.
Because it seems like the basic goal of this kind of collective societal impulse is to follow this path of least resistance down this hill or something, and money and success and affirmation and things are kind of tumbling down it, and everybody goes with that current. It's almost impossible to rebel against it. So the artist or whatever is supposed to stop in the middle of the current or whatever and look up, back up the mountain, and realize that there's this impossible task of like stopping this current or changing it. And even though it's totally impossible, Myth of Sisyphus,
yeah. For those of you guys who don't know, that's pushing. I love that this crowd, someone cheers the myth of Sisyphus.
I bet
that's the first time at the improv. First of all, anyone's mentioned the myth of Sisyphus. They're like, oh, yeah. Unless Sisyphus is like some urban deaf comedy jams comic. You know? Sisyphus tells it like it is.
Carlos Mencia has like a 10 minutes on Sisyphus. It's hilarious. They're probably they heard that on his album.
But so my point is that the Sisyphus myth, I think, on the surface is this really negative story.
Yeah.
You know, like in the Pink Floyd song where he's saying, help me carry this load or whatever. You know, there's all these references. It's always like this defeated, fatalistic thing. But in terms of workaholicness and shit like that, you're just living with this task. And I think I think that's what Sartre's solution was, and I think that's what Martin Luther King is like, why we really celebrate him is because he sacrifices himself to this impossible task, this sacrificial task. And then so he goes, looks up the current, looks up the mountain, which seems completely impossible, and then just finds a way to try to enjoy that subversion, you know, and going back against everything.
So you're saying it's like going, pushing the boulder up the hill is a subversion of the general flow of everything.
In like this
the
metaphor.
Entropic collapse of things.
Yeah, in
you're
this
You're doing
metaphor,
this desperate attempt to fix what is ultimately a planet just sort of rotting in the middle of a hole.
Definitely. I mean, it's all around. It's right in front of you. You don't have, this isn't like an obscure metaphor or anything, but so... So there's this task in front of you, and that's a painful task. You're going back through the current is already creating a type of violence across all the people coming down across it, you know.
So people get mad.
Right.
You're saying people get mad when you're creative. People just tend to get angry at you, probably. I'm sure people are mad at you. I listened to that fucking voicemail from Chevy Chase.
Yeah, well, he was just sleepy.
You know, I went to...
He doesn't like to work that late. I can understand. I was Fletch. Why am I up past 8? It's because of you, you fat alcoholic piece of shit. I get it.
Man,
on
he
his
was,
side.
I saw. By the way, you know, I came to visit my brother in L.A. when he had the Chevy Chase show, and I saw the Chevy Chase show. I was there and saw it. Holy shit, it was bad. It was so bad. It was the most sad thing to watch that show. Expecting, like, I don't know what I expected. Like, the kind of, like, witty, handsome guy from Caddyshack or something. But he just seemed confused. He seemed like he didn't know what was happening. And he came on stage and just seemed genuinely, like, MK Ultra level. Hypnotized by some malevolent Illuminati force that was, like... Like somebody was puppeteering him with a bad connection or something. Like the controller wasn't quite working. It was so depressing and sad. But I like what you're saying. Well, I'm sure he's a sweet guy. Everyone at the center is full of love. And I don't know. We got to love everybody, right? That's the idea. No.
As I've said 1,000 times, I mean, he is... He was absolutely dedicated to making people laugh, which is, you know, some people aren't. And that's like, he was, I would come out into the Paramount lot and he would be stopped by a tour of people that were just touring the Paramount lot. And that is a, all respect to Paramount, that is a shitty tour. Like, that you're just pointing at buildings and going, King Kong was in there. And I'll take your word for it. Here's my $800. It's a bad tour.
Right.
This is the library steps of Community. What? What is that?
Right.
Where's Dr. Phil? For God's sake.
Yeah.
But Chevy Chase would like he would like you the people that ran across him while he was walking from one side of the lot to the other. He would stop. And they would gather around him, and he would suck
their life energy until they withered, withered into weird fig-like things.
All
peddled
roads
them out.
Lead to Rome, you know. Like even if you're a clinical narcissist, like if you really just put the pedal to that metal, if you love yourself that much and that obsessed with yourself, and without any exception, without any shame or anything, I think that would lead to total redemption, making other people happy, which he did for decades. He's a fucking legend.
Yeah, no, I know. I think there's something redemptive about fanaticism, but it is weird if anybody's like solely devoted to one thing. There is something in that that's always creepy. Did you see that picture of the Islamic terrorist who got his legs blown off? It's amazing. It's a video. It's good. I watch it every morning when I wake up before I take a shower. It comes on. Thinking about getting every frame in it tattooed all over my body. But
you should just go to J-Date. You need to spend some time with just go out to dinner with some nice young ladies.
The video is the video is of this guy. He's just gotten blown up, and he's
drinking a Pepsi.
No, almost, okay. Almost.
All right.
He's like, somebody brings him a bottled water, and he's like in shock. You can see his guts are just hanging out, and he's kind of propped up, and the look on his face of happiness is so real, and it's like. It's like the middle of a really nice picnic with someone you just fell in love with. It's just this glow as he's like drinking this water, and then he just sort of dies. And that to me was like, that sums up fundamentalism right there.
It's and like, Chevy Chase.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, then I right away I thought, my God, this must be how Chevy Chase writes his jokes. He watches people blown in half, and then I'm sorry. Why am I? He was really funny in Caddyshack. I didn't mean to attack him. Hey. Great guy. I'm sure he's awesome. I don't know. He's your enemy, so fuck him, Dan. Anyway, the point is, there is a type of friction that happens when you end up diligently pursuing something creatively. And I remember with you, Emil, when we were in college together and you were the first person I met who spent all his time working on art, I remember all I felt was like this kind of sick jealousy. And it was real. Like, I really got annoyed with you because I was jealous and I didn't like the fact that somebody had overcome their entropy enough to constantly be creating something. It was really fucking annoying.
Yeah, I felt that pretty heavily. Hey, I wrote a new song, Duncan. You want to hear it?
Yes.
It wasn't...
That one's good, too. Would you like another wine glass of coffee? That was a fucking just base level callback. That didn't really.
It's great.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, that dynamic. That's part of what I'm talking about. You're like, you're cutting back up this river or whatever. There was a guy. Remember this? There was a kid that would chase me around the campus yelling things because I had told him I was happy.
Oh yeah,
it really insulted him like so deeply that he would chase me around and try to pull me down. And
well,
like,
no, that's because that was another thing that happened to Emil when I met him. He was so depressed, such a depressed person. You were he would lay in bed all day. He was like really down in the dumps. And I remember like we took a class on sociology with this hardcore leftist lesbian feminist professor. Do you remember her? She was hardcore, man. And she was talking about, I don't remember, it was a very, it probably was really important, but I don't remember what it was. But I remember it was just very dramatic. And I looked over and you were sort of slunched over, you're slouched over in your chair, and you got this like weird laugh in the middle of her talking about this terrible like thing happening in the world. It was just this like, it was like the laugh of a 120-year-old man who like heard somebody say there's hope and he's like, ah, there's no hope. You were like a ghost. And I remember like being so sucked into liberal arts college that I'm just like, what a fucking dick. He's never gonna learn.
He'll be lucky if he learns even one of the liberal arts.
Yeah, but you started reading. You all of a sudden you started reading like really hardcore existential philosophy, like Heidegger, and you were reading Nietzsche. And then somewhere in the midst of you spending all your time reading that stuff, it was like something snapped inside of you, and then you became really happy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to say it because it sounds intense, but it's all because of you, really, actually.
Thank you.
Could I get a basket of zucchini sticks? I'm starving. How long is this show?
Sorry.
Well, I mean...
basket of zucchini.
All right, I'm jealous. Fucking musicians, they get all the trim. It doesn't matter.
Well, okay. So, I'm not gonna tell the whole story of my life, but I think when, tell me if this happened to you, but you started. I was a pretty brainy kid, and I was straight edge, and then I started taking drugs.
Yeah. Well, I was a kid and I started taking drugs. That happened.
But I mean, I was about 16, and I think one day some dude was playing Aerosmith and got me to smoke pot, and
that's how it always happens.
We just And then, it was a weeks later, it was just straight to acid. First dude I ever took acid with is actually in the back of the audience right now.
Hey!
Anyway.
Give it up for Dr. Phil, everybody. He came to the show tonight.
I kind of did that sort of junky Basketball Diaries slide where you just you start out trying to learn and then you just kind of become a fucking useless stoner, or whatever. So I destroyed my brain and my brain chemistry with whatever I could get every day. And then by the time I actually got to college, I had been, my skull was broken open by a drifter who took a guitar and broke me over the head. So I had 17 staples in my head and all these drugs in this little box.
That's not a metaphor.
No.
That's what I thought it was.
At first.
My skull had been broken open.
Once you number the stitches, you know that's literal. Okay. But up until then, I thought it was just like a John Mayer song. My skull was broken open by a drifter called Friendship. Yes, of course. Thank you.
My point is, though, that then I met you. And so I had sort of let drugs take me to this place and drop me off at sort of the end of the earth, And then you sort of reminded me that I liked to learn and I liked to think and I liked to read and I liked, whatever, shit like that. And so that it turned my life around. And then you just partially only got jealous because I got so excited by that. And it fueled me to redesign myself, And then we went through all those experiences together.
Yeah, that's a terrible moment when you realize somebody is taking advice that you're not doing for yourself. And it's like making
them
so
happy.
They're
all right here.
Yeah, that was really cool. Yeah, that was an amazing thing to see, though, because you were... What's that?
Oh, I thought she said Charles Barkley. It's heartbreaking.
We'll get to Barkley. I've got a lot of opinions on him. I've got to lead into it.
It's so... I just realized Charles Barkley sounds like heartbreaking. Like,
that's true. Yeah, well, he broke a lot of hearts of many of us, and I'm so sorry. Is he alive? I'm so glad he's alive.
I think he's the Meineke dude now.
Is he really?
I'm pretty sure.
Well, that's going to be the podcast, you guys. No, I'm just kidding. But there is a weird thing that happens where suddenly you become separated or something. Like, it makes you an outsider because you end up getting magnetized into this thing that you're doing. This, your ego's still there for both of you, and you both have got to have at least some idea of what's coming out of you and how beautiful and inspiring and powerful it is. So that sucks you into it even more. And then the next thing you know, you become what people call a workaholic, which is somebody you work so much and so hard
time. No, I don't work hard, but
what do you mean?
Workaholic I accept as a definition because it's an unhealthy dependence on work to
right.
In terms of your identity.
So that brings me to this is the thing that's been happening to me. I've been pedaling around on my bike. And then I went up to Big Sur, and I was sitting on this rock in Big Sur, looking out over the Pacific and thinking to myself, this is way better than anything I've ever done. Like, this just sitting here with my dog feels so great. And riding around on the bike, just that feels better than any phone call I've gotten about some kind of success, or the whole thing feels so good. And then that's gotten into my brain, and I just can't stop thinking about like buying an Airstream and selling all my stuff, and then just like traveling around the country doing a podcast, maybe something like that.
He's so cool.
But the question I have for you guys is, don't you ever think that like even in the like in the midst of all this production and creation, that ultimately it's all the like what the book of Ecclesiastes says, dust in the wind, all of this is for nothing, nothing you do matters, try to drink as much as you want, that won't help, don't drink, that won't help, be with a bunch of girls, that won't help, don't be with any, nothing.
It helps a little.
It does help. That guy who wrote that was an asshole, but... He didn't have a bike. Whoever wrote Ecclesiastes should have pedaled around on a bike. But don't you... So my question is, like, so many people get so caught up in production. Isn't there... What about just giving up everything and vanishing off into the nothingness? Don't you guys ever think about that?
Well, I'm 41, and I'm getting married in November, and I want to have a kid. So now that...
Right.
The second half of that video game starts. Like if I was when I was 30, yeah, I always had that like feeling, you know, which is why I wouldn't write on the staffs of other people's TV shows. I just kept writing stuff and kind of made my own path. But then there's a second half to life, in my opinion. I'm sure this is just drinking the Kool-Aid of mediocrity or something. Who knows? But I want to do it. I don't want to be the Gary Busey character in the back of everyone's wedding, like with the Hawaiian shirt.
Shit.
And going like,
that's me.
There goes another one. Oh. And I'll tell you something. You got to follow the spiritual path. That's what's important. That and a cranapple juice. I want to merge with my woman and make a little Asperger kid and pray to God he's not good at football and play Lego video games with him.
You can make it so he's not good at football. Just make his shoes too tight for the first 6 years. He'll have feet problems. It's called.
I have a feeling my karma dictates that my kid's going to be Keanu Reeves. Like, he's going to be Johnny Utah.
Yeah. That's the scary thing of having kids is, like, they're, you know, there's going to be that inevitable moment when they see their first George W. Bush speech. And, like, your kid could be like, he seems really smart, Dad.
God.
That could happen. But that's called the, in Hinduism, there's these ashrams, is what they're called. And so there's what's called the Grihastha ashram. That's called the householder life. So the idea is like owning a house, having a child, and sort of like the idea is like you're supposed to like in the hardcore version of it, which is ridiculous and comes from the Hare Krishnas because it's such a fundamentalist idea. But the idea is the only reason you have a child is to teach the child about how to transcend the cycle of birth and death and merge with God. That's the only reason you even make life. But that's ridiculous. Well, you guys agree. Maybe so. But I think that's a lot of pressure for the kid. Where you're like, we only fucked once for you. Yeah. Fine, God. Yeah, that seems really intense. But so the idea is it's like there's no... what I like about calling that an ashram is that that it's no different from what's called the Brahmachari ashram, which is giving up everything, abandoning your possessions, giving up, like just cutting every single tie that keeps you locked into the current paradigm and drifting out into the world. And that's a different ashram, which is like the begging monk, which seems more like what you are, Emil.
Nice. Burn.
Bitch.
I think most likely most people follow different trajectories spiritually, and there's no reason why like somebody should, you know, have the same arc as another person. So, but the second part of life thing is incredibly true to me. I think that leisure area, whatever you're talking about, was kind of something that as a kind of Faustian trading artist dude, like I had to do in the beginning. And I was like, had to go out and be like totally lost and get fucked up and waste my time and destroy my body and all that shit and stuff. And then now, second half of life, it's my job to sit down and report everything that I learned, which is like just pure hard work, you know, pure hard work. And so, like Mozart, when he's in the bed, like, you know, reeling off the shit to before he dies or something. It's like it's not fun or anything necessarily, but it does make me happy in a very deep way that other things can't make me happy. And so, when I'm talking about Martin Luther King or Sartre, this solution to the Sisyphus thing, I'm being pretty serious that like you just have to find a way to enjoy this hard work, and then that's sort of like the answer to the equation or something. You may have your point of leisure or like that kind of taking in period instead of reporting, you know, and giving back or whatever. You might have that at a different point in your life.
But don't you think the reporting, though, is there something in it that's like blasphemous? Like the idea of like reporting in, like whenever that sneaks into your mind, like, ah, shit, I got to take a picture of this. It's ruining the moment. That reporting in thing. You know, when Rogan was talking about his DMT experience, he was talking about how while he was in the midst of seeing these golden Buddhas and this incredible like vision of some transcendent force, there was the realization that what he was thinking about was his desire to tell people about it.
Right.
And that creates this wall between you and the experience, you know? Don't you think that selfie impulse is kind of like a satanic impulse? That it's a...
Well, I think it's more like... I mean, if it's happening while life is happening to you, yeah. If you're in the middle of having a life experience and you put the brakes on it in order to Instagram it,
right,
it's a technical violation, but there are 25-year-olds in the audience who for them the joy is in the Instagramming, so that you can't circumscribe that too,
right.
but in the strictest sense, like this guy Sam Christensen, who teaches this workshop in Burbank for actors, anybody, it's like a self image realization thing, just short of being a cult, but enough to be just a really good acting class.
cool.
He said at one point, like, I was in my 20s when I heard this from him, and it kind of changed my life. He said, God is the moment. God is right now. He's here right now. And the devil is 5 seconds ago and 5 seconds from now.
Wow.
The devil is a thing that is trying to keep you out of God's reach by making you think about what just happened and what's about to happen, because God wants you here right now.
That's awesome. That's so cool. That just gave me this great image of Jesus returning, floating over whatever city, and it's just hands holding their cell phones trying to take pictures of, got a shot of Jesus!
It's also a great way to get out of, you know, your girlfriend goes, I'm doing a show at UCB next Wednesday. I'm like, yeah, what are you, the devil? I don't know if I'll make it.
Anybody who invites you to their improv show has been possessed by the devil 95% of the time.
Any appointment, any schedule, yeah, it's all the devil.
Yeah, so that's the trick, isn't it? It's like the whenever I sit down, like I can look through my notebook and I'm always attempting to write a book. And whenever I look at the pages where I've decided like this is where I'm writing the book, it is embarrassingly bad. It's just like so puffed up, like some kind of like, I don't know who I think I am, but it's like suddenly my word choices are all too big and it's awful and basically unreadable. But then when I read the parts where I've just got like, I'm super high sitting in the cafe, unhappy about an ex-girlfriend or something, that's where the good writing is. So it's like figuring out a way to remove the purpose from the act of creation. It seems like an impossibility. How do you do that?
I think if you're doing it for a paycheck, if you're doing it to get something done, then you're going to have to accept that there's a certain amount of falseness that's going to be into it. Like you can't you can't do 10 songs for an album and get it out by November and not have a couple of them be, or a couple, or just a certain percentage of the whole effort be, well, this is the Sisyphean like effort of
right.
of pushing, you know, like because of, for the sake of pushing. So that's how it kind of dovetails with what we were talking about earlier. Like you could release an album or a book or write a TV pilot every 30 years and have every single page and every paragraph and every song and every melody be totally in the moment. But then you're not really helping anybody by being that much of a purist. Like there's the interplay between ego and that thing that comes through it and
right.
obliterates it. It is, I said earlier that the ego had no purpose, but of course the ego keeps the gingerbread man moving. It puts him over to the typewriter.
The ego's the vagina the baby pops out of.
Yeah. Well, the ego looks at your fucking income tax reports. The ego looks at, it tries to get laid. The ego does everything that makes you want to get something done by a certain date. And so it's, you're a business partner with Daffy Duck in every creative endeavor. Then there's the Bugs Bunny who's just like, well, who gives a fuck, Doc, you know. Bugs Bunny's a Buddhist, you know. He was transgender. He was like, he transcended everything. He didn't give a shit, man. His fucking hole, he would be living in a hole in a place where they were trying to make a city, and he'd be like, this city needs to change. I'm gonna fuck these people over. He fucked with an opera conductor for just a half hour. Just for the fuck of it, like he just like he's so zen that he's Charles Manson. He's like,
if only
Jeffrey
my
Dahmer.
Dream is to get
like,
him
there's
on
a
the
there's
podcast.
A point where it becomes.
I don't know if we're applauding your awesome.
I don't know either.
Or Charles Manson.
But anyway, like you look at like Woody Allen stuff like in the 70s, where it's like, who's this fucking guy? He made himself without permission. Nobody invited him up under the silver screen. Nobody right. said, hey, you should be in a romantic comedy. Right. He looked just like Paul Rudd. He looked like a fucking writer, and he was just like, he's obviously his Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck are at war with each other. Like he made, and that's what you see on screen. Like he's. It has something to do with being able to be so Bugs Bunny that you can actually start to make fun of the Daffy Duck, use it in your shit.
I love this so much. I've never heard this. It's like the ultimate articulation of Buddhism and mindfulness, because they usually use big words, crazy, weird, Eastern words to describe this, but Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck, you might have just created the new Buddhism. This might be it, based on the Looney Tunes characters.
Every improv troupe, there's probably 70% of the audience has been in an improv troupe. There's always that one person that hangs up the flyers and books the gigs, and they ain't always the funniest guy on stage.
Right.
Like they're the guy that hangs up the flyers. They're the guy that gets you the gig. And they're also in the improv troupe. And they right. come into the scene and they're like, wow, I'm nervous. And you're like, oh, Dale. But like,
Dale.
The improv troupe wouldn't exist without that guy.
Here's my question. We have to go because we have the light, so I only have a few more minutes. But I'm sorry, you guys. We only had 90 minutes. We've already done 90. How much time do I have, you guys? I can't see.
Six minutes.
5 minutes. All right. Well, here's my question for you guys.
Yes, I will sing a song with email.
That would be awesome. What song?
That was a joke.
It was a joke that backfired because they're into it. Like,
Here's my question to you. It's an unfair question. I haven't given you time to think about it at all, but for the people listening for this week, can you tell them something that they should do that's going to throw their lives out of whatever weird orbit they're in and move them in the direction of something awesome? Worst question ever. I'm just trying to burn time. I got 5 minutes.
I mean, if I'll speak to the writers in the audience, if you're a writer, like, you have been avoiding sucking for 20 years. This Memorial Day weekend, in addition to remembering Pearl Harbor and stuff, sit down at some point and prove that you suck. I tell young writers, like,
yeah!
Write something really shitty. Make an agreement that you're going to set fire to it. No one will ever read it, but like you'll be cleansed by proving to yourself that you are the shitty writer that you think you are, instead of sitting there in this stasis going like, I'm not a shitty writer. Yes, I am. No, I'm not. Yes, I am. No, I'm not. Just be a shitty writer and, yeah, do it.
Cool. Be a shitty writer. Emo?
Well, you have to purge all that shit anyway, right? You got to get past it. There's a good Louis C.K. interview on Charlie Rich the other day where he was saying basically that all the people that like don't become good writers are people that just let fear kind of drive them back. Whereas if you get into those really like unsure places, you kind of pedal it to the metal there. You're going to like experiment and discover way more shit, which is like basic LSD frame of mind or whatever. But so I used to have this, used to have a girlfriend. And she once, I was like trying to sequence a record or something, and I was like, which, does this song fucking suck or whatever? And she was like, it was a really brilliant way to say yes, but she she very gently said something like, well, I think you have said the same thing in other ways that were a lot more constructive, and they came across really well. You know, so I was kind of left to realize, like, maybe this isn't the best articulation. That's partially with your point earlier, is like, as time goes on, your experience goes on, you start to merge all these things, reporting, you know, and the taking in kind of all come together. You realize there's an art to living, there's an art to talking, there's an art to articulation, there's an art to reporting. You have to be, you want to be good at that, you know, and that's really difficult to do. So there's nothing wrong with reporting. It's about reporting it well, you know, and right, articulating something. And if you can really honor that art, then you're going to make everything worth, you know, other people listening to. So I would say, you know, that, like, take my girlfriend's, you know, advice in that sense, and just like realize that the craft is really more about perfecting your ability to articulate what you actually mean to another person, you know.
Love it. You guys, give these guys a round of applause. Dan Harmon, Emo Amos. And before we wrap up, we're having a big after party, the R Bar, and there's still plenty of tickets. So you guys come, because we're all going to be hanging out there after this. So come. I tweeted the address if you want to come. Everybody, give yourselves a round of applause. Thank you so much for coming. There are going to be more of these. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much. Good night, everybody. We got to go. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, everybody. This episode was brought to you by Squarespace.com. If you like the podcast, why not give us a nice rating on iTunes, and also give yourself a nice rating on iTunes, because you're a sweet darling and you deserve 50 stars. Hare Krishna.